So then the next point is what we call the causes of the disturbing attitudes. In other words, things that make them arise. Okay? Because if we can understand what makes the disturbing attitudes arise, what makes the anger come, what makes the attachment come, what makes the deluded doubt come, okay, what makes the laziness come, then if we can understand how they arise, what their causes are, then we can try and stop some of those causes, or at least be more sensitive to when they're functioning so that we don't get taken in by the whole thing. Okay. Now, the first cause, the technical term for this is dependent basis. Yeah, some of these terms are long, they don't mean a whole lot. Okay? Dependent basis. What this means is it's the seed of the disturbing attitude. We get this Tibetan word bokchak. You know, you've probably heard it before. It's translated as seed or impression or imprint. So we have the impressions of karma, which are one thing, you know, that influence what happens to us later on. Here, these are the impressions of the disturbing attitudes. So what this means is, or the seed of the disturbing attitudes. So right now, let's say I'm not angry. Okay? I'm not angry right now. So there's not manifest anger in my mind. In other words, anger, which is a mental conscious mental factor, it's a type of consciousness, that is not manifest in my mind right now. I'm not angry. But we can't say that anger has been totally removed from my mind because the potential to be angry is still there. Okay, the seed of the anger, the impression of the anger is still there, so that as soon as I meet something that doesn't agree with what I want it to be, then the anger is going to become manifest again. Yeah. Are you clear with what I've said so far? So the seed of the anger is not a consciousness. Okay? Because when I'm not angry right now. Okay? There's not a consciousness that is angry right now. There's not a mental factor that is angry right now. But there's the seed of that anger. And that seed of the anger, you know, as soon as I pick up the telephone or as soon as a challa bites me, you know, or as soon as I go outside and it's freezing cold, that seed, which was not a consciousness, is now going to be manifest, and there's going to be, you know, the mental factor of anger, which is a consciousness, that's going to be manifest in the mind, and I'm going to be upset. Okay? Now, there's a slightly different view, as I've understood it, because in psychology, you know, we often talk about the unconscious or the subconscious. And some people say, well, maybe that is like this. It's like the latent potentials in the mind that then, you know, become conscious. But my understanding of at least how people talk about this in common, you know, our kind of psychology, not what they study in textbooks, okay, is the way most of us think. It's like, maybe the psychologists think this too, it's like we talk about repressed anger as if, okay, here is repressed anger. There it is. It's this solid, real thing that has a definite shape and form. And you might be blocking it out. You might not be aware of it, but it is there eating away at you. You're being angry all the time, but you're, you know, it's a real kind of solid view of that anger. And I think this attitude of Buddhism is quite different. Yeah? Because Buddhism would say, well, wait a minute, there's no manifest anger in the mind at this point. Yeah? there's the imprint of the anger, there's the potential to become angry again, but it's not that you're walking around angry all day and you just don't realize it. Yeah? Right. And that's the whole thing about why it's really important to realize emptiness or selflessness, because that gets rid of not only the manifest anger, so that you never manifestly have it going on, but it also has the power to cut this latent thing, the seed of the anger that can give rise later on to angry moments. Yeah. So it's a way of completely uprooting the anger from the very root, from the very foundation, so that it can never come again. Yeah. So that no matter who you meet and how awful they treat you, you don't get angry. Yeah, it's totally impossible for you to get angry. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah? Okay, as I go through some more of these causes, we'll begin to understand kind of the interplay of things that go on to make them arise. The seed is like that. It's like, it's just a seed of potential. It's not molecular. Okay, there's nothing made of atoms and molecules here. Okay, so it's just a potential. You know, if you cut open your brain, you couldn't find it anywhere. Yeah? Now, when that meets with certain external conditions or certain internal ways of framing things, then, yeah, as we go through these, you'll start to see that one of them relates to our way of framing things, yeah, to what you were calling the way we're thinking, that then, you know, kind of feeds into that and makes the anger come. Yeah, so that's, yeah. Yeah? Okay. But what we're getting here is like, without this seed, even if you had the rest, you couldn't get angry. Yeah? The rest of, like, obnoxious people all around you in a horrible situation and, you know, even if your mind were thinking weird things. But, I mean, it couldn't be thinking weird things if you've realized emptiness. So, yeah. 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 No, there's seeds for all of them. But again, don't see the seed as one as a solid seed. Remember? You know, I mean, this is really where you can see how we start to grasp an inherent existence, isn't it? You know, the seed of anger. You know? Yeah. It just means like the potential. Yeah. Which is something that's merely labeled on that ever-changing potential that can bring forth something else. Yeah. And just to even think about your anger, and this is really good to do whenever you get into a really heavy-duty self-concept, you know, I am an angry person, I am an attached person, I am a confused person. Look at the anger. Yeah, I mean, there's a few ways to deal with this. What is anger? And just remember, anger is not one solid thing. It's just similar moments of mind that have a common trait that we give the name anger to. That's all. Anger is something that's merely labeled on top of those moments of similar things. You know, depression is something that's merely labeled on top of, you know, moments of mind, all of which are different, all of which are changing, that have some kind of common characteristic. Yeah. When you start thinking about this, you know, this whole rigid concept we have of ourselves, how we frame ourselves in, we can begin to understand how wrong it is and how we make ourselves suffer by our self-image. You know, our negative self-images, because we make the I very concrete, and we make the I am X, we make the X very concrete. And they're things that are merely labeled on similar moments of mind. Yeah. It's really incredible, you know, when something, like, when you think about this and something sinks in, then it's like, oh, Yeah. Okay. What's inborn, or what we call, because there's different levels of anger. There's the innate anger, and then there's what we call artificial anger. Okay, artificial isn't the greatest word, but I haven't discovered another one yet. So, the innate anger is like what we've had since beginningless time. Okay, the artificial anger is the anger that we learn in this lifetime. Okay, so we learn it's that we should be angry when a kid steals our ball, and we learn we should be angry when somebody calls us a name, you know. That kind of learned stuff. Well, no. What we retain from previous lifetimes is the innate. The innate comes with us. Okay? The artificial may make a whole lot of imprints. Yeah? So that next lifetime we start thinking like that again. Yeah? It takes one little thing and our whole artificial conglomeration starts coming back again. Okay, like let's take, no, the innate thing is the thing that's there, you don't have to learn it. Okay, the artificial one is you learn it, it creates a certain karmic imprint, and then in your next lifetime you hear something that kind of triggers that way of thinking again. Okay? Like, for example, let's say somebody has the belief that there's a creator. I mean, I'm just using this as an example. It could be anything. That's a learned belief. That's an artificial type of wrong view. Yeah, we didn't have that wrong view since beginningless time. We learned that. But we created a whole pattern of thinking like that. So next lifetime, you know, when we're babies, we don't yet have that, we don't think that way. But all we need to do is for somebody to say it, and we say, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah? Okay? That's more the artificial one. The thing is, our artificial ones sometimes are very deeply rooted. Yeah, very, very deeply rooted. And I think this is like really the opportunity of the Dharma practice is to really look at ourselves and say, what is it I really believe? Yeah, and and instead of having those beliefs kind of going on at their manifest beliefs, but we're not aware that they're manifest, to really, you know, become more aware of what it is we're believing and then start to check it out. Because I've noticed sometimes that what we do is sometimes when we listen to teachings, we hear the teachings through the ears of a 4 or 5 year old child learning religion from mom and dad. Yeah? I mean, I've really seen this in myself and in other people, that it's very difficult sometimes for us to listen to Buddhist teachings with a really fresh mind, because we're filtering it through all this stuff we got when we were little about reward and punishment and shame and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that it's hard for us just to even sometimes understand the words the Buddha's saying, because we're hearing a replay of what we understood when we were 4 or 5 years old. And so, for example, and you've probably heard me say this before, I'll go someplace where there's new people and give a talk about anger. And when I talk about anger, I always start talking about the disadvantages of anger. And somebody will raise their hand and say, you're saying we're not supposed to be angry and anger is bad. And I've never said that. I would never say that, because I don't believe that. But you see, when they hear just the disadvantages of anger, you know, what the words coming out of the mouth about the disadvantages, the words that they're filtering, their understanding, is they're going back to being 4 or 5 years old and mommy and daddy saying, you shouldn't be angry, you're a bad boy or bad girl if you're angry. Yeah? So it's all that kind of stuff that's like, you know, I think we need to become much more aware of it. Yeah, those old ways of thinking, those old ways of perceiving, so that then we can start checking up. Well, is anger really bad? Yeah, am I a bad person if I'm angry? Am I not supposed to be angry? Supposed to? What is supposed to be? Yeah, it does like, well, how am I going to put this into practice? So there's some unclarity there. But that's very different than feeling like we're bad people because we're angry. Or not even recognizing the unclarity because we're so busy telling ourselves we shouldn't feel that way. Yeah? It's slightly different. Yeah? But we operate out of a lot of that stuff because we don't even believe we don't even recognize that we're thinking that way. Yeah? So we have two big problems. One is we believe everything we think. The second one is we don't always know what we think. You know, we're thinking things, but we don't even know what we're thinking. Yeah? Yeah. And that's exactly how compassion arises. Because when we can see that in ourselves, then it becomes so easy to have a forgiving, understanding, compassionate attitude towards others. Yeah. Because we realize that when people, you know, whenever they're acting off the wall, it's because this is what's happened to them, like, so easily. You know, this stuff just gets activated. Yeah. The way of realizing emptiness is a very gradual way. Yeah, where we first hear the teachings and get some wisdom from that, then we think about them, and just even having the correct conceptual view of emptiness, if you can stay single-pointed on that, that can be very powerful. That's not intellectual word view of emptiness. It's an understanding of emptiness. It's still conceptual, but it's at a deeper level. It's not intellectual. And then you get at a certain point where that conceptual understanding of emptiness becomes non-conceptual. And that's when you really start chopping things away, you know? And so first you start cutting away the artificial layers of the disturbing attitudes. And then as you familiarize yourself more and more and more and more with this mind understanding emptiness, you start cutting away at even the innate, you know, levels of the disturbing attitudes. Yeah, there's different levels of conceptualization. Yeah, there's, because we usually think of conceptualization as, you know, academic college blah blah. Yeah, and so our understanding of emptiness might start out like that. Because just to learn to use the words right, you know, it's like just to get the vocabulary right when we start talking about emptiness, that takes some time. Then once you have the vocabulary, then you can start looking inside and applying that vocabulary to what's going on in your experience. It's still conceptual at that time. But it's not just intellectual blah blah because you're really taking it into your heart and looking at your experience. Yeah. And so gradually that gets deeper and deeper and deeper. It's not direct perception yet. There's still some concept, but it's not just totally up here jabbering either. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't say whether you got to a non-conceptual state, but it's much more that feeling of you start out understanding something up here, and it somehow becomes more and more a part of you, so that it doesn't seem like a foreign thing you're understanding. When you say grounded, that's, I think, you get more of that experience.